You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network, watching it as well. Hey, inflation, what's all that about? Well, why don't we talk with Eddie Gifford and get Eddie's take on where this inflationary spiral is heading. Hey, Eddie, great to have you back on the show. So tell us, inflation, we know it's negative. We know it's destroying purchasing power, really hurting the middle class and the lower middle class, of course, and the poor. But does the government really want to solve it, or do they really need it more than they want to solve it?
I think that's almost a coin flip right there. But you know, the reality is, like you mentioned, you know, what we always like to say is inflation is like blood pressure. It's a silent killer. It kind of eats away at you and erodes away at you. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, like, what do? I need to sell my house. I need to do this. I need to get rid of the car. I gotta, you know, stop paying the bills, right? So, you know, that's the issue that we're up against. And Powell has made it very, very clear that his number one priority is to attack inflation. Now, the problem with that is that the fix to that is to continue to raise interest rates. So if we continue to raise past the 5% that they're talking about, then, you know, we could see the stock market roll over pretty fast. But the thing about it is that that's going to push up the cost of housing. And housing is one of the primary indicators in the CPI. So it seems like it's kind of like defeating the purpose of what it's trying to accomplish. And really, the only way they truly accomplish getting inflation under control is to cause a deflationary event, and that would be pushing us into deep recession. So do they need it? Right now, I think they need it a little bit because they need to see, they need to make it appear that they're doing something. Do they know what they're doing? A lot of people have said, oh, well, they've learned from all these other times, but they've never been in this situation. You know, the last time we were in a spot like this was the 70s. And we had to raise rates a ton to get out. And people will say, no, but inflation is falling. It's like, no, the stuff that was overpriced has fallen. And now we're sitting in this sticky range right at the 6% level. And it seems like it's going to take a long time for that additional fat to fall off, so to speak.
Hey, so, you know, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And the only thing transitory about inflation, really, is the declining inflation rate, right?
Yeah, and you know, the problem is that the math is going to work in their favor for a little bit longer just because inflation was so high 12 months ago. So anything, you know, like if you look over the next 12 months, everything looks like it's going to be in that six-ish range. So it's technically falling, but you know, at this point, we need to be paying closer attention to month over month. We actually saw the PPI go up last month, and if the PPI was going to continue on the same trajectory as it did in January, we'd be sitting at 8.4%. And guess what? Those businesses are going to pass on that cost to the consumer. So the think that we're like out of the woods, you know, that I think that you're playing a dangerous game there.
Yeah, playing a dangerous game. And look, if they raise rates too much, the economy is not what it was back in Volcker's time. The debts are greater, and the deindustrialization, all these things, it could have a cascading effect where, you know, the deflation starts and it doesn't stop until everything crashes.
Right. I mean, like you could go back and look at Japan in the late 70s and you know, they've been in a deflationary environment for the last, you know, 30, 40 years. And they hit their peak in like 79, 80-ish, and they're about halfway back. So, you know, that just because the stock market has always come back doesn't mean that it will come back as fast as it has in the past. So, you know, that's kind of like the game that we're playing right now. Of course, everyone has this like FOMO, you know, fear of missing out because January was such a good month, but you still kind of got to look at the bigger picture and remember that you're investing over the next 10 to 15 years, not over the next 10 to 15 days. So that's a challenge for advisors to have a more proactive or active management style because, you know, they probably missed out on a little bit of January. But at the end of the day, the goal and intention is to meet the plan objectives and to not take risk when risk is too risky.
I like that. So what are you supposed to do as an investor, as somebody who's maybe coming up for retirement? You want to still get a return. You don't want to just keep cash because that's going to be trash. So what do you do?
Well, I think that you focus on what you can control first. You mentioned earlier the debt levels, you know, and that's the thing that really kind of scares me when I'm looking at everything is maybe it's not at the housing level like it was during the Great Recession about 15 years ago, but debt levels are rising pretty rapidly. Every single vendor seems like they have a buy now, pay later type thing. So the issue there is that, you know, they might be reporting that they're selling stuff, but they're not actually selling anything because no one's made any payments on that yet. And so if that blows up, that can get real bad real fast. So what do you do? Number one, get rid of those consumer lines, pay down those credit cards, get those off. Okay. If you have any debt at all, you know, maybe a mortgage, maybe a car loan. And that's only if the mortgage was taken out 3 years ago, because now mortgages are in the 6.5 to 7% range. And then from there, you know, have more of a proactive, active investment strategy. And don't be afraid to look into alternatives like private equity or even life insurance and annuities, because those can provide some great relative safety and still give you significant upside potential compared to the other safe alternatives in the industry.
Right. Okay. So we're kind of in a holding pattern until we see really how this thing's going to turn out then, huh?
Yeah, I think you kind of got to hold, you know, like you don't want to obviously miss out on like these rallies and that type of thing. So being invested is not a curse right now, but you have to have a predetermined exit strategy, right? Whether that's a stop or having some type of like put in place or some type of big picture view that gives you an indicator that tells you, hey, it's time to play more defense. We just have to make sure that anytime that we're owning something, we know why we own it, but we also have a predetermined reason to get rid of it. And I think that's what's lacking from most investment plans nowadays.
So what's your take like on real estate? Is real estate going to survive this, or is it going to be better in some areas than in others? How do we do this?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base, with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I think the old adage still remains location, 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 right? But I also think that the reality is that these interest rates, if they remain elevated and they continue to remain elevated, real estate's going to have the correction too. The question is how bad is it going to be? And I think that's kind of be determined by what happens in the stock market over the next 3 to 6 months. If we see the stock market fall and test new lows or even go lower than last year, then we're probably going to expect a more or a deeper decline in real estate. I think that, you know, real estate has started to slow down. You know, right now there's not a whole lot of inventory because everybody thinks their house is more than it's worth, so they're not selling. And so as rates continue to stay elevated, that's going to push real estate down. There's no doubt about it. You know, I would expect that at least a 20 to 30% broad decline across the board. And in some areas of the country, it could be like 50 to 70% like it was during the crisis. So A lot of that's going to be determined in the next couple of months. I wouldn't go out and buy a whole bunch of real estate today, though.
Well, it depends on location, too.
Of course.
It might not be nearly so bad in places where population's increasing, like Florida, like Tennessee, like the Carolinas, Georgia, and it could be far worse in states like New York, California, Illinois, where population is declining. It's really hard to foresee a down real estate market protracted where population's increasing. We had it to some extent in Florida from 09 to like 11 or 12, where population continued to increase, but prices stayed down, but they quickly rebounded. By 14, 15, they were approaching all-time highs, and obviously during the pandemic, they exceeded them. So, location.
Yeah, and like you said, it comes down to supply and demand, right? If people are moving in, it's going to push prices up, you know. And there's also an attractiveness to real estate in general for the investor that maybe has a lot of money outside of a retirement plan. There's different tax advantages that you get for investing in real estate that you don't get elsewhere. There is passive income potentially that you're getting from real estate that you're not getting elsewhere. And there's just something about being able to touch and feel your investment compared to just having like a stock certificate, for example.
So true. So true. It's a hard asset. It might not be the most liquid at times. The one thing that the debt revolution has done is that it has pretty much made real estate much more liquid than it ever was before in the form of home equity loans, second mortgages, the market to take those loans on. It's really liquefied real estate. And then with these institutional sight unseen cash buyers, things like that, it's made it much easier to take value out of your home. I don't necessarily know that that's for the better in the long run. It might feel good now taking out the home equity line so you can pay off all your credit cards only to see them go up again in the future, you know. It's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on the person. It depends on the discipline, right? You know, obviously, if it makes a ton of sense from a cash flow standpoint to do something like that, consolidate and at least get rid of like those high credit cards. But, you know, if you're doing something like that, you still have to commit whatever you're committing to the credit card, right? So we can get that thing paid off. We can get through that. And then we can go out and look for something else, right? But right now, get rid of the credit cards. That's probably like the number one priority for anybody right now, because if rates continue to rise, those are the ones that are going up with it. And then, well-rounded portfolio, diversification, own some of the hard assets like real estate, maybe even gold. You know, some people are looking really hard at cryptocurrency. And, you know, I would lean more on Bitcoin than anything else if I was in that category. And then just, again, have a predetermined exit strategy for your more liquid investments. You know, the nice thing about real estate, it's liquid, but it's still hard to get rid of. So it's an easier buy and hold, right? It's harder to get, like, you don't get as emotional about real estate for some reason compared to if you own a stock or if you own a portfolio or something like that. If you can sell it today, right, you're a lot more emotional than if, you know, it's going to take 60 days to sell it, right?
Yeah, it's like people don't look and say, oh my goodness, my house went down $1,000 in value today. A, it's very hard to know that information. And B, the time frames with real estate are so protracted, as for the most part, unless you're buying and flipping and living in it for 60 days or less, you know, you can't really track the day-to-day fluctuations in the market, which I find kind of fascinating. So summing up your advice, Eddie, for 2023, what's the best course of action? Obviously, it depends upon your situation. It's very contextual, but generally, investors in general, what should you be looking towards?
I think right now, liquidity is king. I think that if you're looking for a spot to park money for a little bit for the next 6 to 9 months, stuff like treasuries is not a bad deal right now. You're getting paid 4.5% to wait, right? So that's the advantage of this market compared to the market 5, 6, 7 years ago. You can actually get paid to wait for an opportunity. Getting rid of those credit cards, number one priority. If you're transitioning into retirement and you need income, the interest rate environment has created a very, very healthy annuity and CD environment. So, you know, you could be looking at like annuities or CDs potentially as a way to provide you with a little bit of excess return over what those treasuries have, but maybe even more. You know, we've seen some annuities out there with no risk that could potentially, you know, hit double digits per year over the next 10 years just because of the way they work, because interest rates are so elevated. So, you know, and then if you're just trying to get started, you know, I mean, right now is a great time to dollar cost average in. You know, just I wouldn't just throw all your money in one basket right now. I would make sure that I'm just adding over the next 6 to 9 months. And getting that money in, and just knowing that in the long run, the stock market, or at least the U.S. stock market, the U.S. real estate market, those have shown to be very, very resilient in the long run. And so, although we want to protect short term against some type of waterfall sell off, you're not going to go wrong if you can just buy the good companies and buy the property in the good areas.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I appreciate what you're saying. And we will definitely touch base with you again throughout the year, Eddie, to see exactly where this thing is heading. We appreciate it. Where's the best place to find you and your work? How do you connect on the webs?
So the easiest thing to do, you know, you can obviously like Google Eddie Gifford, and my LinkedIn will be like right at the top there for contact information, www.tactivewealth.com/Eddie Gifford. And that's Eddie with a Y, EddieGifford. That's probably the best place to go to kind of learn a little bit more about me and how I do things and what we do. And then, you know, we're more than happy to talk to anybody. The first two times that we meet with anybody, no charge, no cost. We just want to figure out if we can help you and whether or not we like each other and whether or not it makes sense for us to work together.
All right. We like that. We really appreciate you coming on. There's a link to Eddie's site in the show notes of this interview on our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Please click it. And while you're there, sign up for our free newsletter. Eddie, and if you got a question for Eddie, you can always fire me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. We'll get you a quick answer. Eddie, appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. Thank you. You have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.